The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Motor Bunny, the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator that offers fabulous creative sexual experiences. We use it and it rotates, it vibrates, and it delivers mind-blowing orgasms. Enjoy Motor Bunny as your favorite sex toy. When you order the Motor Bunny, multiple attachments are included along with the Link controller, which allows wireless control from anywhere. Motor Bunny is the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator on Earth. Use the link in the show notes and spice up your sex life with a Motor Bunny. You're listening to Kinky Cocktail Hour, a conversation between adults about sex-forward relationships, kinky lifestyles, and frank communication. If you're under 18, please stop listening and visit scarletteen.com. I'm Lady Petra, and my pronouns are she, hers, and we.
I'm Saffa Master, and my pronouns are him, his, and we.
And this is Kinky Cocktail Hour.
Cheers! Cheers! Okay, what are we drinking tonight?
Well, I chose to make a perfect Manhattan.
Ooh, I love those.
Yeah, and so it's basically two parts of your favorite rye whiskey. I mean, I like rye because it gives the spice that I think Manhattan needs, but yeah. You could also do this with bourbon.
Sure.
But we used Forrester's rye. And then put half a part of dry vermouth, half a part of sweet vermouth, two shakes of Angostura bitters, and an eighth of a part of Dom Benedictine.
Wow.
Then stir it. You want to drop a cordial cherry in the bottom with some of the cordial cherry sauce to keep that cherry seeded. Then you're going to turn the mixing tin for about 100 turns. I actually did 80 and let it rest for 20 turns, basically. And then I pour it over a spoon so it doesn't disturb the cherries at the bottom.
Nice. Yeah.
And
it's a beautiful drink.
It's actually an excellent drink.
But it's beautiful. It's like, you know, that cherry on the bottom.
Super sexy.
Very sexy drink. The right light, you know.
Yeah. Just, and by the fire, it looks great.
Yeah. Man, that is like.
It's really balanced. When it's really balanced like that, it's almost shocking.
Yeah. I mean, it's all these little bits of alcohol that mix together so beautifully.
And play.
And play nicely together. Yeah. And leave you with just a spectacular. Man.
And it's long because I'm having a long, spicy finish from the rye.
Yeah.
Which is really delightful.
Yeah. It's amazing how Dom Benedictine just makes everything better.
Yeah.
There's a tiny little bit, eighth of a part of Dom.
Yeah. And I might try it again next time with more, but I say an eighth because that's how I made this one. Mm. We were at the end of our Dom. Mm. I don't know how many Dom bottles we've gone through since we started this podcast.
Probably like six or seven.
Yeah. I think we're a little over one a year. It's great.
So good.
Because it's a cordial liqueur, so it literally, you don't need very much.
No.
So it lasts a long time. But when you add it to, especially a lot of the, you know, the brown alcohols that are out there, it plays so well. So well.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, you can fiddle with like two things in this. You can either alter the base alcohol, you know, rise or, and you can get better and worse rise, and you can get better and worse.
I'm curious if absinthe would be good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a whole nother thing. But you can add or have more or less of the Angostura bitters and more or less of the Dom Benedictine to find like the perfect.
I think it needs more Dom. It would pull more flavor out.
I think it's so balanced.
But it's excellent, though. I'm not saying it's not excellent. It's excellent. But the point is, we're striving for perfection.
Mm. But it is so balanced. It doesn't,
what I like is we've made several versions of this. I mean, we figured out which liquors we like the best.
Yeah. You
know, but we've really like played with different things and we kind of know this one. And that's what we've been doing is like, oh, just a little more Angostura. Or, you know, we did one of these one time with the Mexican chocolate bitters.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it's great. Anyway, good stuff.
Yeah. The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Slub USA, the world's strongest, most powerful male masturbator. Visit Slub USA at slub-usa.com. Today's conversation is brought to you by WeMinder, a behavior chart app for kinky couples like us. Learn more at WeMinder.app.
Okay, so Lessons in Chemistry, Part 5.
Yeah.
Interesting episode, this one.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite episode in a way, because through the episode, you get to meet Mad, who is Elizabeth's daughter,
mm-hmm.
and you get to see Elizabeth flex her muscles as she becomes a star on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like some self-actualization occurring, but also it's in the realm of her sort of demi-sapio space where she's very precise and very measured and very
mm-hmm.
intellectually engaged with whatever she's doing. So you get to see that throughout the show.
Right.
And it's a transitional experience for her because it starts out with her being confronted by her lack of funds. And so she's selling Tupperware. She's having Tupperware parties, Tupperware champagne parties.
Yeah, she's using her kitchen lab to do the creation of other businesses. So she's doing her research. She's doing research or correcting research for other scientists and getting paid on the side, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
And now she's running Tupperware parties because she can cook really well. So women really engage with like, here's the leftovers. And people are taking leftovers of her food home with their Tupperware that they purchased. She's quite smart. She's handing, you know, it's a midday party. So it's just, it's stereotypical, but it's like she's pouring champagne for all these women. And then they're tipsy. They're like, oh, are you going to have some? She's like, no, I never drink before noon or something like that. You know, all breakfast.
Yeah. And, you know, so that's happening. And then you get to see her out on the water rowing in a four-seater.
Yeah, I think it grounds her.
It grounds her. But also, like, you get to see, like, her accomplishment level
mm-hmm.
in that world. And you get to see her interacting with her daughter, Mad, in the grocery store, for example, where, you know, it's a very precise intellectual conversation. Mad asks, can I have, like, this particular cereal? And she looks at the ingredients, which is what something people should do.
Yep.
And she reads the ingredients and she goes, you know, it's probably not a good idea to eat things that has an ingredient that's in jet fuel to eat.
Yeah. And I shared with you, I was laughing because she used the full name and I can't say it offhand right now, but I go, oh, that's BHT. Yeah. And I remember being a kid and having to read the cereal labels and I was not allowed to have any cereal with BHA or BHT in it.
There you go. Right. And so Mad's this little intellectual shopper. She goes off and actually, she created the menu for this particular...
Yeah, because they were going to make the menu for the dinner for their neighbors. And them. And what was interesting, too, is they're power shoppers like us in the sense that we go in with a purpose.
Yes.
And shop for exactly what we do. We often split up in the store because it's not that I love going up and down every aisle and shopping. For one, it's a terrible amount of time. And you often overshop that way.
Exactly,
She does exactly what we do. Create a menu. Put the items on your menu and then go shop for them.
And get those
and
items.
And get out.
And get out. Yeah, that's what they do. And coming out of the store, she has a little encounter with a woman who has two little rambunctious boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she says to Elizabeth as they were chatting about it, she goes, I just wish I had 5 minutes of time.
Or maybe they can set the table. Yeah,
but that sort of sits in her mind. And that comes back later, but the story continues where she's trying to make application for a job and she gets into the final round with another Phillips lab.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she has to have a reference for that job. And so she's conflicted because she has to go back to Hastings
to get the
reference. So she goes back to Hastings and she has to speak to Donati. Donati's gone. And who's there? Well,
the fraud.
The fraud. What is his name? I can't remember. Anyway, he says to her, well, I'm
in
charge now.
He's the one that was second to steal the research for her and her.
Yeah. He says, well, I'm in charge now and you can have a job here.
And I won't give you a reference.
Yeah, but I'm going to offer you a job here.
And you could be second author.
Yeah. Ooh. And she looks at him and goes, like, why would I work for you? You stole my research.
Yes. Yes.
And he says, well, this is a good job. You'll be second author. And she goes, well, I've considered it. And she walks out. She obviously isn't going to do it.
And then we go to Maddie in school, and she's not being intellectually stimulated, so she's just being curious and asking questions, but the teacher's taking offense to it because the teacher barely has control of the class already, so when anything comes up, it's, you know, she said something like, well,
animals
are people because they were talking about the family tree, and one of the girls said, well, I don't know, is it Lassie? And she goes, these are humans, these aren't people. And she goes,
People are
animals. And then there was a big argument, and then kids started jumping like monkeys around the room. And it was just that she isn't being stimulated. So the teacher calls Elizabeth in and has a conference with her and basically suggests that she goes to a private school so she gets stimulated intellectually.
Yeah, and of course, anytime a little kid has to change schools, they're freaked out. They're going to lose their friends
yep,
and so on.
It's a huge,
huge deal.
Upset.
Yeah, so she's having this conversation, but she realizes that private school costs money.
Yep.
So she's conflicted because on one hand, she's torn because she wants her daughter to be stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, she doesn't want to do like anything particular for work that isn't in her realm of chemistry.
Yes, and because she still has a judgment.
She's very judgy. She's very judgy.
But at that scene where she goes out to get her daughter's and the friend of the station manager are there. Can she come play? Yeah, for a while, because my dad will pick me up later kind of thing. So she lets her come over, and then the station manager shows up at the door and he says, listen, I'm not here to coerce you to be on TV anymore. I'm just here to pick up my kid. But the reality is that pot pie was good the second day. And then Elizabeth just breaks it down in chemistry as to why the starches would do that and how they capture the flavor.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, the extra molecules were good. And she crosses her eyes at him like he wasn't listening. But they end up spending some time in the kitchen engaging in just how she's moving about the kitchen to cook her dinner.
Yeah.
And starting to talk about why he was even considering her and what he was interested in. And he said some things, I think, that caught Elizabeth's ear, because particularly she said something like, when he was trying to coax her into the idea, she goes, well, it would have to be 50-50. He goes, well, it can't be. And she rolls her eyes like a woman would at that time, because they realize
it's not going to be 50-50.
I won't have anything.
She's going to get exploited.
And then he says, because I absolutely, if I'm doing my job, no one knows I'm around.
Yeah,
it's your show.
Yeah.
You call the shots. And she's just like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. And then she goes, okay, well, I'll consider it. But here's the thing. I'm sending my daughter to private school and it's expensive. And he goes, oh, you're going to make more money than you've ever made.
And she just
doesn't get it. Right?
She doesn't get it yet.
Yeah. So then she agrees to go to the show, and she goes to the show. And she's getting the walkthrough. There's a really funny moment as she's getting the walkthrough, because this young man in a tie looks at her and says, coffee. And she goes, oh, how do you like it?
Yeah.
And he says, no.
How do you like it?
I'm getting you coffee. That's my job.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time she realized, like, oh, this is star power. This is a shift happening. And so she walks into the set, and the station manager has built this gross pink set.
And baby blue.
Yeah, like really gross. And she looks at it and she goes, well, this isn't going to work. It's just completely revealed. And he goes, no, it's TV.
I also thought about it later. I thought, yeah, you know what they did is they've done studies.
Yeah.
Because TV was black and white at this time.
Yeah.
And they did studies on what, even though it's black and white, what colors show better in black and white that don't wash the actor out and those
for
kind
example,
of things. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a reason for it. I realized.
Yeah.
If it was color, it would be pukey gross. It was like Pepto-Bismol pink and baby blue. It was terrible.
It was. Yeah, we have color TV. And so then they're in rehearsal for the show, and the station manager is watching the rehearsal, and he goes, this is bullshit. Calls the station manager up. The owner's watching the show. Calls Walter up. And basically reads in the riot act. She should wear a tight dress. She should.
Well, she was in one.
Seductively.
She should put her gloves on sexily. And,
she should make a cocktail for her husband.
Yep.
You know, she should smile.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, she's not really.
He's just complaining.
And he goes, no, we got something here. This is going to be good. And then through the rehearsal, she realizes, look, I can't read the cards. Because they say things that I don't believe. So I'm just going to speak my mind.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, no. Like,
well, and they also had a couple sit downs after some of the rehearsals on the steps where he was drinking a whole glass of scotch or something.
Right.
And he was being real frank that the ratings are low there, that we need to make a change. And he says,
all during rehearsals. They haven't even started the show.
Yeah. And he says, what I'm looking for is you to be like you are when I met you in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, you to be
yourself.
Be yourself. Right.
And so then she has some considerations, because meanwhile, she's watching TV and trying to document statistics on how often these hosts smile and what goofy things they do. And she's just kind of appalled.
She's being a scientist. Right.
And at the same time, she's like, taking things in, and she's strategic. She's like, do we need a tagline and things like that? So long story short, they get to a point where a couple of weeks before they were supposed to air, he comes and says, okay, it's now. Now it's happening. We're doing it now. Because he's being pressured by the station owner. Yeah. And I think they were hoping that she would flop and then they could fire her and get somebody new.
Right.
Because their ratings were dropping. And so she gets up and she takes a breath and she really sits there and thinks for a while, and they're live. So she's just standing there in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And then she just all of a sudden goes.
Yeah. And she creates this whole ethos around food is important.
What you're doing
is
creative.
Important. You know, you're feeding your family. Like, it's all very in her ethos.
Intentional.
Very intentional. And she does the show. And then she finishes with this tagline, children set the table. Your mother needs a minute for herself.
Yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant.
And that's just from that lady at the supermarket. But it speaks to a lot of women.
Right.
Who, it's crazy. But I look at that time and I think, yeah, there was a time there where, yeah, you were married. But really, the raising of children was coming down to one parent. It was as if you were a single parent household.
Right.
And that's all you did.
You had a king to serve when you go.
Yeah.
So after that show, the station owner is pissed.
Yes.
Because the first thing she does on the show is she clears the counter of all
the clutter. She has the set crew come on to set live TV and remove
the
shit.
And the owner had just put the cocktail set on the middle of it.
And he's like, make note that this is here in this position, you know.
So he calls her up to the office, and she and Walter are up there confronting him. And he says to her, you will smile. And she goes, I will not.
And then the manager tries to speak for her and says, well, what she means is, she goes, no, it's not what I mean. He heard my words come out of my mouth. He knows what I said.
Yeah. And then he continues with, I'm the owner of the station there. And she said, look. Men have been trying to tell women how to think and whatever. We're just supposed to sit here and take it. And I'm just not going to do that. You know, you want a cocktail? Why do you think your day is longer than mine? Why didn't you make the cocktail?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's like baffled.
No one's ever spoke to him like that.
In the meantime, there's phones ringing off the hook.
And he's yelling someone answer the fucking phones.
Yeah.
You know,
and then,
kind of
and then one of the women answering the phone steps into the office and says, hey, can you just tell us what CH2O4 is or whatever.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, it's vinegar. I'm sorry. And so then she goes into the room and announces to these...
to all the secretaries.
All secretaries answering the phones. It's vinegar. And then Elizabeth walks into the room and it's just phones ringing everywhere. She picks up the phone.
And she goes, hello, this is Elizabeth Zott.
No, separate six. This is Elizabeth. And she goes, yes, that Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And so anyway...
And they gush on her about the show.
Yeah, gush. And the lead secretary says to the owner, we're going to need more people to answer phones because this is a very popular show. So he's a bit baffled by it. But, you know, part of his bafflement is that they did a little panel of, like, opinions after the show.
Yeah.
And they're collecting opinions from, like, six men and two women.
Two women.
And the men are like, oh, it's boring. She's wearing a lab
coat. She needs to smile more.
This is so dull. And they get to the women and, how do you feel? She goes, I felt capable.
Ooh,
right? It's a good word.
Big word.
It's a big word. The guy goes, what does that mean? You know? So the whole society is imbalanced, right? It's a very misogynistic society. It's operating in
very 50s.
Very 50s, yeah.
A little later than Beaver Cleaver. We're moving towards the 60s, but it's right in that area.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's so stereotypical all around her, yet she is her own person.
She really is. You know, it's really fascinating to watch that. I feel really inspired by her.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and then at the same time, Maddie's, you know, worried about going to this private school. Elizabeth has told her she has full veto power, but she wants her to try it.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Maddie, even though she's going to start at this new school, she's still considering the family tree project that her old school gave her.
Well, she's still at the old school.
Yeah, but she's still considering that. And so she ends up, you know, because she's kind of a latchkey kid due to the studio time that Elizabeth has to be in, she has the neighbors pick her up and they have to go do choir practice or something. So she sits in the pews
just watching,
waiting.
Yeah.
And the
before she gets there, she's at home and she's researching her family tree.
Yeah.
And she goes into her dad's study and opens the closet. And she's looking around like I did as a kid, you know, in my parents'
She's snooping.
Rooms. Yeah. And then she climbs up on a step chair. And she pulls down a box and it drops and it spills open. And there's a bunch of demerits in the box from a school regarding her dad.
Yeah.
And so she grabs a bunch of them and sticks them in her pocket and runs off because the neighbor's picking her up to take her to choir practice. And so she's sitting in the back of the pews, and the preacher, who happened to be the same preacher that was the preacher at the funeral, but she doesn't know that because she wasn't there, but he just happens to be. And he comes over to her and says, you know, what's your name? She goes, well, I can't tell you. I don't know you.
Yeah.
She just has this very adult interaction with him. And so he introduces himself and she introduces herself. And he goes, oh, it looks like you got a family tree there.
Yeah.
And she goes, yes. He goes, well, that's fine. She goes, well, she goes, that's debatable. He goes, what? And she goes, it means I can make an argument. Yes. He goes, yes, I know what it means. But you know, why don't you, like, where are you stuck? He goes, well, I know about my mom's parents, but I don't know about my dad's parents. He goes, well, why didn't you ask him? And she goes, well, because he's dead.
Yeah.
And that sort of stops him. And he goes, oh, my God. And then he says, well, let's look at this.
She pulls out the demerits. And she goes, it's great that this is from a school, but I have no idea what school, because there's no school name on it or anything. Right. But the emblem for the school is there.
Yeah. And the preacher looks at the emblem. He goes, oh, well, that's St. Christopher or something.
St. Luke.
St. Luke, right?
St. Luke, yeah.
And so you have to figure out all the St. Luke's. She goes, but, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of them.
And she didn't know where to begin.
She didn't even know where to begin.
You know,
she's seven. She didn't know where to begin.
Yeah.
So at the next choir practice, she's sitting out there, and the preacher comes out and he says to her, hey, there's my favorite detective.
Yeah, exactly.
And he goes, listen, I've done a little research. And so, and he goes through the alphabet. He goes, these are all the
states that I have.
These are all the states I've done, A through F or something. And these are all the St. Luke's in all the states. And she goes, how did you do that? He goes, well, I went to the library and got the yellow pages, and I just go state by state and look them up. He goes, but you have to be aware. There's going to be a lot of them because Christians are not very creative in naming churches.
Right.
So she's excited because she's got a pathway to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And the next scene before the end of the show is she's at home
waiting for her mom,
and her mom comes in.
Running a little late.
You know, she had to do star stuff. She had to sign autographs.
Yeah, she's never done this job before, so she doesn't have the schedule down. She had to get the sets ready for the next day and all the props and the supplies. And then there were a bunch of fans that drove from a very long way just to ask her about cheese coalescing or something like that. And so she wanted to actually tell them how to do
it. Because she's being very integral in her interactions with
people. And she's an educator.
But of course, Mad is very upset. And she goes, what did I miss?
Second fiddle.
And she goes, you missed everything. She goes, I don't know. There's one thing to do. Let's take you out to dinner. So they go to a diner, and they're sitting at the diner, and they're sort of starting their conversation. And the waitress immediately comes over and starts talking to Elizabeth about her show. And
oh, my God, your show is so great. Yeah. I love you. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And can I get you some cobbler?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maddie's just like, oh, rolling her eyes. And she goes, well, come on, let's just eat, you know. And then she comes back and says, oh, please, can you sign this, you know.
Yeah,
so she's just
like
interrupting them. She's really getting the experience of celebrity that people don't realize. Like, they're people, but they have celebrity. You know?
And Elizabeth has purposely made herself invisible in most places of the world, I think. And so now she's getting acknowledged for things she's actually doing, and it's a whole new sensation for her.
That's true. Yeah.
I really think that is, because she was overlooked. She was an excellent chemist, but overlooked by what
everyone.
You would call her peers,
yeah.
because they were all male at the time. It was a very misogynistic time.
Yeah.
But now she's with women, and she's getting respect, not just because she can wear the pink flowery dress, but that she really knows how to cook. And these women are really interested in knowing how to do this and why these things happen and how they can control.
Yeah, well, you know, my favorite cookbook is The Modernist Cuisine, because it's basically the chemistry of cooking, right? Same idea.
Yes.
So this experience of Maddie being interrupted and her being acknowledged, it's kind of like the first time she's experiencing this fulfillment of her professional life, like crossing over into the public sphere. And then the camera pulls back from the diner. And there's a
huge
billboard with
a
picture on it and the Supper at Six
flashing lights.
Yeah, it's like you realize her life has changed. And I said something to you during the show that I think is interesting. You know, the show in the book rather than on the TV had an impact that stretched across America. It became a really powerful show.
Uh-huh.
And this is just her first taste of what's going to happen.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So I thought it was an excellent episode. And I think that we see a couple things about Elizabeth that are interesting. We see that she's very consistent in the way she interacts with the world,
mm-hmm.
no matter where she's interacting.
Mm-hmm.
We see, even in the way she's interacting with her daughter around reading, like she left her a note when she came home as a latchkey kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, okay, we left off reading this book on page 86. You can read to the dog. Have deviled eggs in the fridge.
They're best with paprika. Yeah.
Like she treats her like a person. You know, she doesn't treat her like a kid. And she lets her make her own decisions, like giving her veto power over going to the private school. And she has a lot of angst about that. But the way Elizabeth interacts with the sort of the chemistry position, interacts with the TV owner, interacts with her audience, it's a very consistent, authentic way of being. And I think that's what makes her such a powerful character.
Mm-hmm. I do think. And I think Maddie's typical at this age because she's asking questions and she does want to know who her dad is.
She is precocious. She's a precocious
kid. She wants to know who her father is, and she feels disconnected. She feels that space. Because Elizabeth will talk, you know, Elizabeth is very sapient when she talks to her daughter about her husband. She says things like, you know, I love the person I love the most in the world until I met you. But, you know, a kid is looking for like things to latch on. Like, did he have blue eyes? Well, he had blue eyes like you. Did he have brown hair? Did he have this? Where are all these questions coming from? And she doesn't understand. But if the child has never met their father, they want to know what they look like. They want, that's a natural phenomenon.
Yeah, there's a great moment when she's sitting talking to the preacher. And she said, I didn't think you could miss something you never had.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, that's very wise. You really can. Yeah.
And he talked about blind faith. He says, you know, what did he say? Because it was really
pointed,
good.
Yeah. He said, blind faith is worse than no faith, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, with blind faith, you're just making shit up, effectively.
Yeah. You're believing with no real cause to believe.
You know,
or real belief within yourself.
Yeah.
And with her, she's being curious. She really wants to know.
Yeah. So I just think the whole episode, the previous episode is more of a bridge episode, but now we're sort of getting into the relatedness between her and her daughter in a real way.
Yeah.
And between her and Walter in a real way. And we see the impact of the show. And you sense that they have a real familial relationship with their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a much more settled experience for her now. So now we go forward.
Yeah, amazing.
That's it for today. If you're interested in kinky relationship coaching, online domination, or if you'd like to sponsor the pod to keep it going, please visit our Patreon website at Lady Petra Playground. You can reach me via email at ladypetraplayground@gmail.com. Our music is composed and performed by Roger Ferguson, who can be found at rogerfergusonmusic.com. Till next time, cheers!